Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
An excerpt, perhaps the most famous excerpt from Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous I Have a Dream speech. That dream, in many ways, was realized after his death in the subsequent decades of the civil rights movement. It was furthered on by many who shared his not only his ambition, but also his vision for what civil rights could look like in the United States. He's talking there about peace and equality. He's talking there about an erasing of the distinction between black and white that would eventually come with that dream. Is that what we are seeing today in the civil rights movement in America, in organizations like Black Lives Matter? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us for our series Worldview Watch, talking about a Christian response to racism, Pastor Jonathan Fisk. He's pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
The dream that was articulated there by Martin Luther King Jr. was born of a pretty deep Christian worldview. His hopes were at the time, many people considered them completely unrealistic. Are organizations like Black Lives Matter, are they the rightful heirs to King's dream?
Well, I would say no to that question. I'm sure that they would disagree with me and say that they are. But if you take them, even at the meaning of their own words, or their own propaganda, even their own name, Black Lives Matter does not imply that all lives matter. And there is even a history you can see on Twitter of famous athletes like LeBron James claiming that all lives matter and being taken to task, being called horribly derogatory racist terms like Uncle Tom and Coon on Twitter, you know, in the public eye for that statement that all lives matter. And yet, that, you know, I have a dream, he said, that we'll live out the meaning of the creed of America. He's not talking about Christianity. He's talking about Thomas Jefferson. But it's not a bad idea. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that would be all lives matter. And by its own, at least claim, proponents, and then I would also say by its actions, which we can talk more about, the Black Lives Matter movement, as it's presented itself to America, is anything but the heir of Dr. King's movement. If anything, they're undoing much of the ground he gained. And one of my fears, I know it's the fear of others, is that what's going on now will create more racism in the coming decade and decades, maybe even taking us kind of to irreparable damage for a generation of people for whom this is the image of black culture that they're getting to see on TV, and that's about all they're getting.
Did it go off the rails? Not so much the civil rights movement, but these things that are typified by organizations like Black Lives Matter. Did it go off the rails when it unhitched its idea of civil rights from King's Christian worldview? Obviously, King had some problems theologically, but he did generally have a Christian worldview.
Yeah, well, I suppose you could make that case. I'm not confident I can say yes or no in that was like an intentional thing that happened, but certainly as American culture has unhitched itself from all men being created, right? And thus all men being created equal, we are less able to stand on those values which naturally would flow from that. So it would make sense that rather than perceiving or seeking the good of all, communities that feel oppressed would instead begin to seek after their own benefit. There's some connection here also with another theological movement called the liberation theology, which is sort of this idea that Jesus came to undo oppression. And so in every era, in every place, wherever there are the oppressed, Christianity is there to help them become unoppressed, even if that means oppressing their oppressors at times. And so there is some wrong-headed Christian underground to these movements as well. And it's a real hodgepodge, it's a real mixed bag. So I'd be hesitant to lay this entirely at the feet of postmodernism, but certainly postmodernism and our lack of moral culture has been a catalyst to what's going on here, so that people really don't think that they're doing anything wrong when they go to a protest and end the night by trashing the Charlotte Hornets store and taking all the gear for themselves, right? I mean, this is a team that the area would identify with. It would be something that all communities would really appreciate and respect, and yet it ends up just being pillaged and thievery is gone on. In the name of what? In the name of getting rid of racism? In the name of undoing the bad image that's been hoisted upon the black community about how they're dangerous and they're all thieves? You're going to fix that by publicly breaking into stores and rioting in the night? This is where they really have, if I'm going to say where they detached themselves from Martin Luther King Jr.'s approach, it was in his dead-on commitment to nonviolence. That in all of that movement, all of the civil rights movement, they were so strongly opposed to violence that they would have disowned publicly and loudly any violence that was taking place. And chided their own communities and saying, we can't win this way, right? All we're going to do is further the racism like this. We're going to create racism but with our violence. And this is where I think Martin Luther King Jr. gets this from Jesus, but I don't know that it's Jesus' main point. But the idea that, like a sheep, he was led to the slaughter, that he would not lift up his voice in the streets, that he would not call on angels to save him from the path of suffering. So Martin Luther King Jr. and that entire movement was willing to endure all manner of suffering nonviolently, right? They wouldn't bring guns and weapons and scarves to cover their faces to a protest event. They wouldn't protest at night. They would protest during the day, right? And as Christianity, of course, teaches, you know, those who do evil do it at night. Why? Why go out into the darkness? Why bring about this dissension? It almost seems on purpose, and that's a terrifying thought to contemplate as well.
Strikes me that King's dream wasn't just about righting wrongs. That is justice in a mechanistic sense. This is wrong. Those things could have been accomplished with things like affirmative action, where righting wrongs in that sense. King's dream was also about changing hearts and minds. Talk about that.
Yeah, it really was. It was about all people coming to love all people as, what do you call them, co-heirs on this journey. And the journey, of course, is in a broken, fallen world, but it is no less true. The brotherhood of mankind is not the heart of Christianity, but it is nevertheless true. I think the most striking line out of his speech that he gave is the idea that he says he hopes that this would happen, that the sons of slave owners and the sons of slaves could sit down together. Yeah? And forget it. Yeah? Not remember it. Let it go. Forgive. Yeah? What a dream. What a dream that we could really live in a post-racist, post-racial America, where we are not judged by how we look, but by who we are. But that then goes with that, and this is where your first question gets to, you know, judged by our character. Well, you can't have character if there's no such thing as character. You can't have duty if there's no such thing as truth. And if anything is really at the root of this kind of catastrophe we're watching unveil before us, it's the lack of duty and character that many of these young people who are out there, you can watch the video of them breaking windows and beating people in the head, running into reporters, trying to light a guy on fire. There's no character here. There is no authority here. I'm not talking about the police. I'm talking about them having a belief that there's a right and a wrong. and there's limitations to what a good person should do, even when evil is being done to them. As opposed, you know, you really have this dog-eat-dog idea, do unto others as they've done unto you and worse, get vengeance, right, repay evil with evil. And I don't think you have to go to Christianity to find a counter to that idea. I think a Buddhist would say the same thing. I think a Buddhist would say, you don't repay evil with evil. Right? That's not how their version of karma works. And the Christian would say you would repay good with evil. Because what profit is there? Or what value do you have if you only do good to those who love you? You've done nothing but what the worst of mankind does. Yeah, that real virtue does good even to those who do evil. Now, does that mean you should go out there and get yourself shot by rotten cops on purpose? No. But it maybe means you should obey the gun laws. And when a cop pulls you over, no matter what color your skin is or his skin is, you should say, yes, sir, yes, officer, and keep your hands on the wheel and don't complain. Take your ticket and drive away, right? And so much of what's going on seems to be born of a lack of that desire to be part of a society at all. It is civil unrest in the most realistic sense. And again, my fear is, what is this doing now to our next decade or decades of any kind of race relations? You know, what happens now when you have your average Anglo-American person walking down the street and they see a black person walking the other way? How can they not have in their mind these images that they're being shown on TV come to mind? It's horrible. It's horrifying. It's prejudice creating. And the Christian response, what we want to talk about, we want to fight against that idea. We want to beat down that fear. We want to remind ourselves that no matter what's going on, turning the other cheek is what we should do, and loving our neighbor as ourselves is what we should do. But at the same time, I don't expect the majority of this Christian of this country to have a Christian response. I expect the majority of this country to respond in utter selfishness, and that's going to be more fear and more racism from every end as the finger just gets pointed at everybody else. So I guess my plea is, you know, if Black Lives Matter, and they do, then why can't we go back to this dream instead of this violence? Why can't we go back to this idea that we could sit down at the table of brotherhood and forget about our skin color? The little boys and little girls on the playground wouldn't even notice that people are of a different skin color. That's the dream I grew up believing in. I was driven to it by the education that I received in both the Christian day school and public school, and I just got to wonder, where is it? Where is it, Black Lives Matter? Why won't you preach that? You know,
you actually, with about a minute here before we take our first break, you actually have recently made an observation of all things about that old sitcom, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, how it, in a lot of ways, reinforced King's dream. What are you talking about a minute before our break?
It did. And, you know, I'm borrowing this from another radio host, Steven Crowder, but he's spot on when he pointed it out, that in the 90s, there were several TV shows that had black families in them, and the shows revolved around these black families. There were some white characters. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was one of them, and Family Matters was another. And in both of these, though, were shows that were watched largely, I don't know if it's a majority, but they were watched by white people. I watched it. I watched TGIF on Fridays and laughed at Urkel and loved him and liked the dad who happened to be a cop. And I didn't think twice about it. I didn't think, oh, these people are of a different race than I am. They're of a lesser culture or less. None of that came across my mind. For me, this was the living out of what exactly Luther had dreamed. Look, we live in America. There's black and white people here. There's Asian people here. It's great. We're all Americans. This is good. We love our constitutional rights, and we love the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is wonderful. So it was. It was an era where we were post-racial. And so I'm wondering, like, we're back now. We've digressed. We've ran away from that and set up boundaries between each other. And I just don't see. I mean, it's not like all the financial turmoils of the inner city were fixed by the 90s. But we were at a place where, at least emotionally as a culture, theoretically as a culture, we were ready to not hold anybody back because of the color of their skin. And now, I'm not sure that's where we are anymore. It's terrifying to me to think we've regressed so far. It almost is like watching the age of era of Jim Crow again on TV take birth again. It's horrifying.
Pastor Jonathan Fiske is our guest, pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. You'll find the link to this book and to Worldview Everlasting TV under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. So when did things change? When did we go from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to Black Lives Matter? We'll answer that after this.
Is this what the people of Bel Air living like? This might be alright. But wait, I hear the prissy bourgeois and all that. Is this the type of place that they just send this cool cat? I don't think so. I see when I get there. I hope they're prepared for the Prince of Bel Air.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
What help was ever to retain the catechism's doctrine plain?
What makes a church unique? Perhaps we should ask what makes a church faithful. Calvary Lutheran Church of Elgin, Illinois continually learns Christ's doctrine, simply explained in the small catechism. This doctrine teaches us Christ crucified, who even today comes and serves his baptized children in word and sacrament to forgive, strengthen, and teach us for daily life. This, Christ's own work among us, makes and keeps Calvary Lutheran Church faithful. Visit us at clce.org.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/LCMSU.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Does your confessional Lutheran nonprofit or church need a new website? Let WordSites help you for free. WordSites is a volunteer-led group of technology and marketing gurus who have come together to help their fellow Lutherans. With the support of an effective website, you can clearly proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in. To submit your organization for consideration or to learn more, visit WordSites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website, reformed.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a Christian response to racism, our series Worldview Watch with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. Jonathan, trying to kind of untangle or diagnose the problem here is difficult, but I wonder, should the church itself accept a little responsibility? I think the King was positively prophetic that another of his famous writings, Letter from a Birmingham Jail, he says that in those days, he's talking about days when things were better in America. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. Does the church have to accept some responsibility for Black Lives Matter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is getting us back to our kind of moral quandary question, right, where we've lost touch with any idea of truth. It's been a long time since you saw any of the major leaders of the American churches, and you can name off anybody you want to think of, short of the Roman Catholic cardinals and bishops, who have been willing to stand up loudly and publicly and take a stand on moral issues in such a way that they would receive sort of a countercultural backlash, that they would hit it from the wrong direction so far as the popular majority is concerned. Quite the opposite. You see these large churches that kind of came to dominate our populace in the late 90s and early 2000s, these mega churches, that sort of make their living telling you what you want to hear. And once you start down that path, it's hard to get off it. Yeah, it's hard. Once you're saying, as Joel Osteen is wont to say, you know, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to enable people and equip people. You maybe start by not judging one thing, and by the end, you can't even tell the difference between right and wrong on any matter. And so, as Christianity, have we been quiet? Have we allowed ourselves to be cowed as well? Have we in fear of losing what we have, been unwilling to speak up? I think that is absolutely true, and I'll be the first to admit my own fear. And say I'm wrong for it, right? That we need to be standing on what Scripture says in all matters, and that this slope has to be stood against. We can't just roll with that thermometer aspect, that we reflect what the culture says. Or I remember a conversation I had once with a lady from Eden Seminary. This was at a gathering while I was at seminary where they got all the seminaries in St. Louis together and they had us talk about moral issues. And we were at the table trying to figure out, what her place was. She didn't believe the Bible was true, didn't really hold to any kind of doctrine. We asked the question of her, what would you do if you were at the deathbed of somebody? What's your goal then as you go into this ministry? What would you say to them? And she said, I would just help them believe whatever they already believe. And, if the church is going to take that tactic, then the church has no business doing anything. No one needs us to help them believe what they already believe more. If a religion, and I'm not just talking Christianity, if a religion is going to be a civil religion, it has to call the civil world to account. And it has to have a moral code. And until we start piping up about right and wrong on this matter and calling racism what it is, that it's racism when you think that when you have somebody shouting, don't burn down our houses, run out to the white suburbs and burn down those houses, well, that's racism. And we got to call it what it is and not be afraid of the backlash.
Do you think the goals of King's Dream have also been harmed because the lifestyle left, the sexual revolution, have hijacked the ideas of King's Dream, claiming them for their own?
In some ways, yes. Certainly, they have hijacked it, and certainly they have, I would say, very dishonestly equated their plight with what the African American population was dealing with in the South in the 60s. I mean, I don't think anybody alive in America today can really even understand the kind of prejudice that was being leveled, the kind of control over lives that was being leveled back then. And so, trying to hitch your wagon to that for the sake of what ends up not being really freedoms, but the ability to silence dissent and gain control of the government, this is a quite dishonest and disastrous thing. And it does. It diminishes what Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement gained. It makes it trite by comparison, that what they gained in freedom for all men now simply becomes the rights of a few to, say, parade half-naked down the street and tell everyone else that they're hateful for not liking it. It's very, very shallow by comparison.
If there's what King benefited from in his era was an American society that at the time, not uniformly, obviously, and far from perfectly, but at least assented to what you have been calling here a moral code. They at least assented to that, maybe only out of sheer pragmatism, just to keep the laws in place so that someone doesn't steal my stuff. But they still assented to it. Does that still exist?
I think that pragmatically people will insist on having the law benefit and defend them when push comes to shove. I imagine that if somebody, if I saw someone breaking into the Charlotte Hornets store, regardless of the color of the skin, let's just have it be a white guy for fun, a white guy breaking into the Charlotte Hornets store coming out, and he's got a new hat, and I ran up, knocked him over, and took his hat, he'd be mad at me. He would accuse me of stealing from him. Yeah. So we all know it when it happens to us. The issue is whether we are capable of a society respecting the one who's not me, and having the law be for the one who's not me. This was the grand idea of equality in America. It wasn't equality of even all rights or even all value. It was the equality before the law, that none of us could be judged differently on the basis of the law, regardless of our race or our creed or our sex. And that idea is profound, but how do you hold on to that when you don't believe that the law applies to all people equally anymore? You just can't. And when that happened, how that happened, this has been this slow side. You can point to the 1960s, not the civil rights movement, but the hippie movements and their enduring kind of destruction of moral values. You can point to the 80s and the 90s. You can even ask, and you made me think about, so you're asking, when did this all happen racially? You know, I was so astounded at how racially motivated the campaigns of Barack Obama in his first and second runs for president were. How much of the campaign was, come on, America, let's have a black president. And I kept having these words from Dr. King run around my head. It's like, I'm supposed to judge him based on his character, not based on his skin. Why am I excited about him being black? Shouldn't I be excited no matter what color skin he has? Why does his being black matter? But see, you see the seeds of it by then, that we'd let go of something that Dr. King was fighting for. We'd let go of the equality of mankind, and we had made racial politics part of our national identity. And, you know, these 8 years that we've had under President Obama have been, amplified. They've moved quickly. Things have changed quite a bit. But that the seeds of this that we see now, they were there in that. How can we say in the era of a black president that we have one, that we're the most racially divided we've ever been, and yet that's what we see? It's bizarre. It's unnormal. And again, horrifying.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, thank you very much for being our guest.
Yeah, I appreciate being on.
After this break, we're going to talk about the extinction, the near extinction of pro-life Democrats. Father Frank Pavone will be our guest, National Director of Priests for Life.
Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.